It's time to get on the ice. Music City Gold is on the air with Kyle Hancock, Daniel Mangrum, and Matt Bain. We are Smashville's best fan-driven podcast, featuring news around the league, the Predators, and the occasional hot take or two. Powered by the Ingram Agency, you're listening to Music City Gold on Penalty Box Radio.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Music City Gold. This is our second to last episode before we hit our Christmas break. I am Kyle. With me, as always, is Daniel and Matt.
Hello.
Hey, you guys.
So first things first, boys, how was your weekend? And before you answer, Daniel, we're going straight to Matt.
Boom. Right on the spot, baby.
I knew it. I started off the weekend by not knowing it was Friday.
Yeah, that was kind of funny.
How do you not know it's Friday?
I apparently didn't know.
I just didn't know.
Yeah, so got a call from somebody. They were like, what are you doing tomorrow at 1 o'clock? You free? And I'm like, no, I do this thing called a 9 to 5. I'm not free. I'm going to be at work at 1 o'clock. And it took me like an hour later. I was like, oh, tomorrow's Saturday.
And you are free.
And I wasted all of Friday not mentally preparing and knowing that it's a happy Friday. You know, everybody gets excited for the weekend. I forgot all of that. So Friday wasted for me. But that's the kind of week that it was. A bit of a long week of work. So
now I want to ask, how do you mentally prepare for a happy Friday?
Oh, you just do. This, the whole day starts out differently. You know, it's kind of like, everybody knows that.
Yeah.
Friday's a good day. You're waking up, you're happy. Everybody's got a little more pep in their step at work and a good mood. So, and I just missed out on that. I was still in the middle of the week mood.
He also has to mentally prepare for podcasts, which we found out tonight.
Same concept. You got to know what's going on ahead of time so you can prepare for it.
But here's the deal, though. The podcast pregame has really stepped up this week. And you know
it
why?
It has.
This week, I finally broke down and bought a legit espresso machine and grinder for the house, for the podcast room. It'll be cafe day podcast.
Cafe,
yeah, it's fantastic. We all have our coffee assortments over here. Kyle has a nice latte. Matt's working on, I don't know, whatever he made.
Latte.
A latte? Oh, it looks like we all went latte route tonight, but we had a double shot espresso the other day. We've been dialing in the machine just perfect. Man, let me tell you, best purchase I've made in a long time. And I have a feeling everyone is going to enjoy this one.
I will say, the latte you made me the other day was the first latte I've ever had in my life.
What? Don't you like live at Starbucks?
Cold coffee, man. Cold brew. That's been my jam for years.
Have you tried the nitro cold brew at Starbucks?
It's disgusting.
It's not disgusting. It's very interesting. It has like a creamy head on it like a beer does. It's
Didn't
from
like
tap.
It.
Oh, it's interesting. I like it.
Yeah, no, they got the tap at the Starbucks that I go to. I was just like, he's like, you want to try it? And I was like, sure. And
Kyle's pretty plain Jane.
Yeah. And so when I got over here, you know, Saturday, Daniel and I went to the Blackhawks game, which we'll talk about later. And before we left, he was like, do you want to try my new espresso machine? I was like, yes. And I was like, he said, what do you want? I said, just give me something. He gives me a latte. And I was like, this is delicious. What is it? And he goes, this is a latte. And I go, I've never had a latte before in my life.
Just a mind blown moment. Kyle's like, where's this been my entire life? So, hey, I'm pretty excited about the purchase, but, you know, I'm always ready for hockey talk as well, but now we have some espresso to go along with it.
And I will say, we are forgetting one big thing, and I guess I'm tooting my own horn. I got engaged.
Congratulations, Kyle. Good job, buddy. It finally happened. Finally.
The end of an era.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a long time coming. So your bachelor party is going to be off the chain.
I told Chelsea, and I know she's going to be listening to this, that the cops may show up at my bachelor party.
Yeah, you know, there's several people that will be invited that I know are going to elevate the level to the party to the next level. Zeb Sane might be one of them, so hope he's listening to this episode.
And I have a feeling he will be the reason why the cops will be called.
Yeah, that's accurate.
I don't know if it'd be accurate or not. I mean, we didn't do a lot for his bachelor party in the way of, like, troublemaking, but I remember when I got engaged, it became the, where were you at when Kyle was engaged? Like, I took her... we went to church Sunday, and I told her, I said, our pastor is going to make an announcement from the stage, and of course he did. He was like, before I get to the last announcement, before we get to the rest of the service, he goes, I just want y'all to know, miracles do happen. From the entire church, Kyle Hancock is engaged.
It's true.
Cheer goes up, looks back to my parents in the corner, and he was like, miracles do happen. My parents got their hands raised. So it was a big deal, and she met a ton of people. And by the time we left, she was like, I am peopled out. She goes, I didn't think I'd be talking to that many people in my life.
And you're probably never going to talk to half of those people ever again. So that's just part of it. But Yeah, it was pretty funny seeing the reaction on Twitter and Instagram. People were like, where were you when Kyle got engaged? So,
and for those wondering where we got engaged at, Opryland Hotel.
Of course.
Yeah, good place.
She had never seen it for Christmas time, so my plan was we were going to go there. And I knew I wanted to take her. If you ever go to the Opryland Hotel.
Did you do the waterfall close to it, Delta?
In the Delta, yeah. So if you go into the Opryland Hotel, go to Delta Island, where the convention centers are at, there's a staircase that takes you to the very, very, like, three or four stories tall.
Yeah.
That's and that's where I wanted to propose to her at, but I wasn't going to tell her. And so she walked in. Well, I said, we walked in, and I said, if you know where you're going, just look around. So we did for a few minutes, and she's like, I want to go up there. Perfect.
Perfect.
She led the way up there. She's leaned over. She's leaned up against me, pulled the ring out. I said, will you marry me? And she's like, I'm so glad I got my nails done.
Wow. That's the only thing they ever think
of. Yeah, that's a typical girl comment right there.
Well, was anyone around to witness this? Was there like a ton of people?
There was a little bit of crowd to the side, but I purposely kept it off to the side so that way they didn't
see
it.
Did anyone see? No one saw it?
No one saw it. That's her wish. She didn't want people to be around.
I'm with her on that. I'm kind of a private person. I don't want a bunch of people around me
watching. I know, but I just wanted some rogue videos of Kyle to show up on, like, you know, Facebook or something a day or two later on News Channel 5.
Well, to be fair, we did get pictures made the next day. So, and they actually turned out really well. I was very pleased with them.
So with all this happy news, it's time to get into some awesome hockey talk. Kyle, let's start us off with some league news.
Well, as a few minutes ago, we asked, you know, the question, where was you at when Kyle was engaged? Flyer fans will be asked themselves, where were they at when Ron Hextall got fired by the Flyers?
I don't think they're going to care. Something tells me they won't.
I mean, their season has been kind of mediocre. You know, you get shut out against the Devils. Then you get shot against the Lightning, you know, back to back. You know, you got to make a change. And, you know, these types of things are where you normally see the coach being the first piece to go. But instead, the ownership let the GM go. You know, the Flyers president, Paul Holmgren, released a statement saying, the Flyers organization has decided to relieve Ron Hextall of his duties as executive vice president and general manager. With the, of course, appropriate accolades, thanking about him and stuff.
Sure, whatever.
But the real reason, you know, as TSN's Frank Saravalli goes on to say, is that he was fired for his inactions. He didn't really, he had a plan. I will tell you, he was a very methodical GM. He had a plan. He stuck to it. But the Flyers are basically in a win-now mode, and they're not winning.
Oh no, they're not, because they've played 25 games, and they only have 24 points right now. Not very good. The only team worse than them, which is shocking, is actually the New Jersey Devils, having played 25 games and only amounting to 23 points.
Wow. Did not know that.
Yeah, that's a little shocking, actually. I just was looking at the league standings today and didn't realize that the Devils were in the basement. So,
what place? You got that pulled up?
They're 8th in the Metropolitan. And they are 28th in the league.
Wow, I actually did not know
that.
The
only teams worse than the Devils right now are Chicago, St. Louis, and the Kings. It's a little shocking because usually in this situation you see the coach let go. So this was the reverse of the norm that has been happening, the coaching carousel that has just, you know, exploded onto the scene last month. I do think, though, a lot of their problems have to come with goalie issues, but... You know, they keep getting all these players, and then they're like, oh, we'll put them in for a little bit, you know, Matt? You know how that works.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a Red Wings thing. Like, they like a player, and then they take him, and then they don't play him. Who's that guy's name again?
Yeah, Mrazek.
I knew it. But.
So,
I don't know who he is.
Well, disrespect. So, yeah, not only did they let Ron Hextall go, they also let this – the assistant GM go, Chris Pryor, and assistant coach Gord Murphy. And on the news docket today, actually, they have named their new GM, who is Chuck Fletcher, who I don't really know much about, but I know that was...
He came from the Wild.
So, I mean, that seems like a logical replacement, but...
We'll see if he can right the ship. Like you said, you kind of draw an allusion to Detroit. I felt like they were kind of in limbo as well. They're kind of in rebuild, kind of in bottom of the tank. I don't know. You don't know. So, we'll see where it goes.
I'm just waiting for Gritty to become the new head coach.
Wow.
Did you see he made a half-court shot the other day?
He did. I was actually amazed by that.
He even nominated himself for Times Person of the Year.
he also got like 30 write-in ballot votes for the elections that happened a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Senate.
Yeah.
Gritty for Senate.
He's probably the best thing that's happened to his organization.
It's the best thing going for him right now.
That's sad, but yes, it is interesting, no doubt.
I mean, he's got quite a large torso. You could probably put him in goal.
And you know he's got a belly button?
Yes, yes. It's kind of creepy.
Yeah, just too much information.
Yeah, his shirt was rising up one night, and he was showing a little, you know.
It was weird. It was like, you're like, you don't expect a mascot to have a belly button. It was just like, oh.
No, they thought of it all with him. Don't worry. He's got the googly eyes and the belly button and squeakers in his hands. So, straight out of a nightmare. So, yeah, they well done on the design for Gritty.
And moving on, we got some Capitals to talk about.
Oh, I wonder who is going to make Capitals news.
Well, if it's who we're thinking of, it's probably Tom Wilson. And let's check our notes. Yes, it is Tom Wilson.
Checks the video replay. Is it a hit from Tom Wilson?
Yeah, does anybody want to take a stab at what he's in the news for?
Could it be another hit up high or possibly illegally?
No, never. Tom Wilson is an upstanding citizen.
A saint.
So if you don't understand, we're obviously mocking the situation that, speaking of the Devils again, Wilson was ejected after an illegal check to the head of Devils forward Brent Sinee. And if you look back at the GIF or the video, it really didn't look like a check to the head. But at the same time, Wilson really didn't make an attempt to get out of the way.
It was definitely high shoulder. He had a lot of speed, and it was from behind. So, I mean, he didn't even see it coming. Brent didn't even see it coming. I have no idea. And the funny part is, what happens? The league does nothing.
Yeah, they don't discipline him.
Despite him being ejected from that game.
I know. Well, this is the funny thing. We were talking about it on in the car ride up to the Blackhawks game. It's really interesting because the refs on ice thought it was egregious enough to give him a match penalty, thinking probably in the back of their minds, one, it's Tom Wilson.
Yeah.
He's probably going to get a hearing from this and probably suspended. So I better just do a match penalty. So they gave him a match penalty, which I totally agree with. Completely agree with. But the league does nothing after that, and especially after a 20-game suspension and then the whole arbitration. Oh, man. It didn't look good. I'll put it like that for the league.
I hadn't heard if he even got a hearing for that or they just didn't even take it that far.
He got no hearing at all.
Okay.
The other point I made with Daniel in the car Saturday is that more than likely, if he wasn't going to get a hearing, the refs gave him a match penalty to get him off the ice because they knew from that point forward the Devils were going to come after him.
Oh, I mean, you know it's going to happen. You're going to get some retaliation. He's used to that, but I thought the refs on ice made the correct call as far as giving him the match penalty because they know his track record, and thus the league is going to probably give out some sort of punishment, and then nothing happened.
Yeah,
it was a little shocking to me.
I agree with the refs. I'd rather err on the side of caution and go, you know his track record, go ahead and get him out of here because he's not really helping the sport of hockey, and he's doing the kind of hits we're trying to get out of here, you know, as far as concussions and all that stuff. So not a good scene right now, and he apparently hadn't learned his lessons from the times prior, so I don't know. Forget that guy.
And of course you're gonna have those old school hockey people that are gonna be like, oh, that's just a physical game he plays. It's like, look, concussions are a bad thing. This doesn't help the NHL's case at all that these hits keep happening, because they keep talking about they want to get rid of them, but then you have issues where Dustin Byfuglien got last week.
Oh, yeah.
Got hit. He gets taken off the ice. I can't remember the game that he was in off the top of my head. No pun intended. But
wow.
He gets hit.
Wow.
Goes in the locker room.
They clear him. They cleared him for the ice. I mean, it's like at this point, you're kind of like, hey, Buff, do you remember the hit on you? No? Excellent. Get back out there. It's a Paul Kariira thing. Like, Stanley Cup Finals. Like,
yeah.
Like, anyway, I didn't. I mean, I'm exaggerating, of course, but they clear him, and he's back on the ice playing. And if you're a Jets fan, you're like, okay, he's good. Perfectly fine.
Yeah. And then he comes back later on in the week, and they're like, Dustin Byfuglien's on IR with a concussion.
And they said he was suffering, like, some illness, too. Like, that's a little sketchy. I'm like, you don't need to – a player doesn't need to play if there are even remote signs of that, because that is something that could literally end a career. I mean, that's serious, and it's a good player, no less.
Yeah.
I mean, Sidney Crosby struggles with concussions too, and I think that's one of the reasons why we're seeing the crackdown on these dirty hits is because we don't want to see great players. As much as I, you know, like, don't like Sidney Crosby, like, you don't want to see him injured in career because he's a excellent player.
I thought it was going to end his career a couple years ago. I didn't think he was going to play again.
He had, what, like, 2 or 3 concussions that 1 year?
Yeah.
And like I said, no matter what or whoever the player is, you don't want to see great players or even mediocre players end their career over something like that. So I have a feeling the league's definitely going to look into this one. They're going to have to and try to figure out how to ramp up some precaution protocol for checking this in the middle of a game, because obviously it wasn't followed to a T or they missed something, and that's on the Jet staff.
Yeah, my understanding is the in-game concussion protocol, like what the doctors do in the dressing room, isn't as full scale as it does like after the game and all that. It takes a little bit more time to look at it a little more in depth. So that might just be after something they look to going forward, is how they can maybe take err on the side of caution and when they're not quite sure in the middle of the game going forward.
And so it's Monday night in Smashville, and we're playing the Sabres. So it's only fitting that we talk about the Sabres and how well they did in the month of November.
It's a little shocking, actually. They cooled off the last 2 games. They actually went to Florida and didn't do so hot in the Sunshine State there. They lost to Florida, the Florida Panthers, which was a little shocking. But they did lose to the Lightning, which is a good team.
Well, they're not used to the heat.
I don't know if that was the case, but they did cool off a little bit. But let's talk about this impressive 10-game win streak strung together by our former assistant coach, Phil Housley.
I mean, it's stupid impressive. So, like I said, they had a 10-game win streak from November 8th to November 27th. And they're now fifth in the league as of tonight's recording. Because right now we're recording during the Preds-Sabres game. So, as of this recording, they are fifth in the league with a record of 17-7-3.
And a quick update, Kevin Fiala just scored, so it is now 2-1. So, fantastic. Nice sign that Fiala is stepping up. That's two goals in back-to-back games. So,
but you want to talk about two players on the Buffalo that are having quite the season. Jack Eichel and Jeff Skinner. Skinner, you know, he's the new guy for Buffalo from Carolina, and
I mean, he's kicking butt.
Just killing it.
He just got a goal on the Preds, too. That's their only goal tonight.
So now he's got 21 goals.
Yeah, he is on an impressive record-setting year for himself. 29 points with 21 goals. Pretty sure that's up there with Line A. yeah. Let that sink in. He's over Ovi and tie with Line A, I think, as of right now, unless Line A scored tonight.
And we should also mention Sam Reinhart's got 21 points on the season, 6 goals and 15 assists. And number one draft pick for the 2018 draft, rookie Rasmus Dahlin, has got 14 points, 2 goals, and 12 assists in his inaugural season with the Sabres.
He's racking up the assists. And by the way, yes, tonight the Jets are off, so that means Line A and Skinner are tied with goals at the top of the league.
Wow, you would not...
What a great acquisition!
Yeah,
what a great acquisition for the Sabres this year. I mean that is the I'm going to say that might be the early Taylor Hall trade. I know the Oilers are still regretting that, and so is McDavid. But you know, 21 goals, impressive start for him so far. So we'll see if he can keep that up the rest of the year.
Yeah, I think a couple days ago, Carter Hutton was like 8-0 in his last 8 starts too.
Hutton has been great for the Sabres.
Hutton's been really hot. And, I mean, it helps that the team's been scoring a lot, too. So his save percentage isn't the best. Well, Pecks is, but
it's amazing when you see former Preds where they go to different teams and they always have a struggle in Nashville. It's like getting out of Nashville is a breath of fresh air for them. For example, Pontus Aberg.
Oh, he's kicking butt? He's got like 6 goals, doesn't he?
He's like the leading scorer for the Ducks. Where would you have seen that in Nashville? He would have never done that.
The problem is the Ducks are severely injured, too, and they've put him into positions where he has more time on ice, where he would not have gotten that ice time here. I mean,
he never would have.
Our team is so deep. Well, funny right now because we're practically the Milwaukee Predators or the Nashville Admirals. You can pick, but I'm just saying the depth has really shown for this team, so there's no way like Aberg would have ever made the lineup here. So I'm happy to see him actually get some good quality ice time and succeed with a team because, I mean, quite frankly, he's bounced around everywhere.
And, you know, you're talking about teams out west. It's a good time to mention Seattle as well because the Board of Governors is meeting right now.
Yeah, we just got some hot off the press juicy news about, first of all, the expansion and possible Central Division mix-up here, Kyle. What do we have to say here?
So Pierre LeBrun on Twitter states, quote, "My sense is that the Coyotes have known for a year that they would likely be the team moving to the Central Division once Seattle begins to play, but I'm not exactly sure how thrilled Arizona is about it." Owner Andrew Barroway declined comment when I asked him after the Board of Governors' Day 1 meeting. Then he goes on to say, quote, "A reminder that the Arizona move to the Central Division is part of the expansion Seattle package the governors vote on tomorrow, and it will pass." So, unofficially, it looks like the Coyotes are become a Central team. So, to all you Coyote fans, welcome to the jungle. You're going to die.
Yeah, this is going to be very interesting. We kind of had a brief discussion before the podcast, kind of throwing back some you know, ideas. So, the crazy thing is Arizona is pretty far out there. They were really close to all the Pacific teams. Now you're talking about extra travel time. I mean, the closest two teams are going to be, what, Colorado and Dallas? You're going to have really long trips to Nashville, really long trips to St. Louis, the Wild, Chicago, and these are Winnipeg. And by the way, if you thought the Pacific was tough, hello. May I present to you Nashville, Winnipeg, and also now Colorado. I mean, the Central's never, like, really been down over the last several, you know, seasons. I mean, even before that, then the Red Wings were here, and they dominated. So the Central has always had a good track record of really great teams. So I don't see this getting any easier for them. And then, quite honestly, I think this might be the tipping point to get them to move. I don't think they want to do that, and Matt might have some more info on that because he loves the Coyotes and knows a little bit about the GM. But they might want to stay, but it's going to be very difficult to keep the fan base going there and also with all that travel time included now.
It's my understanding that the owner has said that he does not want to move, even when they were tanking and just doing terrible for a couple of years, 2 or 3 years back. But either way you look at it, the Central is just not going to be a great fit for them. So we'll see where it goes. I don't know if they're going to move. That's going to make them, like you said, travel time go out the roof. I don't know. Time is going to tell on that. But also the other thing with that Board of Governors meeting is that the cap projection is expected to be at $83 million, which is up from $79.5 million. But the numbers will be finalized in a negotiation with the NHLPA in June, but that's the estimated. So
yeah, way to help out Toronto. And like,
that's the first thing I thought
teams
about.
Teams that need to sign major players next year and the year after, I mean, that's going to help Toronto. That's going to help Winnipeg off the top of my head.
It's going to help us, too, down the road.
Yeah, it will eventually, but those are the two heavy hitters that I could see really gaining some nice headway in that cap space because they were already really strapped. So, you know, $3-4 million is really going to go a long way for them.
Well, guys, I think it's time we get to some Preds news. As of today, the Preds are first in the Central. They are first in the West and third in the league. And during the last stretch of games since we recorded, we had a new member of the Preds Hat Trick Club.
Yeah, it's been actually quite crazy with the hat tricks this year for the Predators. We're on pace for a lot.
So you've got Philip Forsberg, who had a hat trick October 27th versus Edmonton.
That was a loss, too, by the way.
Colton Sissons, November 7th, gets a hat trick at Colorado. Kyle Yarncroke gets one November 17th versus the LA Kings.
That one might have been the most impressive one to me because he sniped all three shots. They were absolutely incredible. Side note, go ahead.
And now our last person. Who, besides Forsberg, Sissons, and Yarncroke, would you expect to have a hat trick on the Preds?
Well, not the person.
Not the guy you're about to mention.
Yeah, it was a little shocking.
Austin Watson.
And he was playing top line that night.
Against the Ducks.
Yeah. It's been a really weird year for us as far as hat tricks are concerned. Hey, I'm not complaining, but it just shows you our depth. And, well, we've been quite versatile at shuffling lines because, quite frankly, we've needed to.
Yep. I mean, you look one day, you've got Kyle Turris out. Philip Forsberg's out. Victor Arvidsson's out. P.K. Subban's out.
Still out.
Benino, too.
And then
he came back today, actually.
He's back tonight.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was just illness. Yeah. Okay. Him and Rocco were both out. That's another reason why they called up Richard.
Yeah, which, by the way, when we get to the Chicago game, Anthony Richard came up from the Admirals.
First
literally,
game
like, the day of, 4:15 on the plane.
Yeah, we'll go into all that. We heard some of the interviews with it. That is a crazy story, too. But, like I said, the Milwaukee Predators right now are trying to carry this team through this really rough stretch of injuries. I mean, I think it was said the other day at the Chicago game with all of our players out, including Bonino for that game for the sickness, it was north of 29 million cap space was out for that game.
Yep.
You're joking. I mean, that's an insane amount. You're talking now that Forsberg's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks or, you know, with that undisclosed hand injury. Arvey's out with the thumb. Turris has an undisclosed injury. You also have PK, which we still don't know. I mean, I see Instagram videos of him all the time. He seems fine. It has to be something ankle-related, I felt, from some of the, you know, some of the shots I saw on the ice before he got injured. They are 4 of the top 7 point getters gone. And it's crazy how much attack and more firepower we have with Arvey in the lineup, too. Like, the top line is just isn't the same. And also, we've been swapping lines. Every night it feels like we have a different top line. And it's just more like Joey just sitting there looking and watching his team whittle away. I did see a funny GIF. I think it was Justin actually posted it. And it was from Avengers. And it was Tony Stark holding Spider-Man. And it said,
I cried a little bit.
Joey looking at looking for his line mates. And Peter Parker just slowly drifted away. And I'm like, yeah, that's pretty accurate on how the season's been going. So, I can't wait to get them all back. But we'll break down all that and also some of the newbies in the later games. So, Kyle, what was the first game?
Well, the first game we had since we recorded on the 20th November was on the 21st. We had a 4-1 win against St. Louis. You know, the Blues have been struggling. They continue to struggle. The firing of Mike Yeo didn't really help. What do we think about that game?
Kind of took advantage of them a little bit, it felt like. No. It was a strong game as far as what we should have dominated them, and we did. We came out 4-1. I mean, a lot of the stats actually show it, too. We outshot them 34-29. What was really standing out for me was, well, we actually won on faceoff. We won on hits. We won on blocks. But, once again, the power play. 0-3. This is not a shocker. And what's crazy is we're still scoring this many goals without doing anything on special teams.
But anytime we do bad on special teams, I always think about what Matt says. Special teams win your playoffs.
That's right. But I got an interesting stat for you. Get this. The Preds, according to the point, are 29th in offensive zone possession time. But they are 5th in even strength goals. And they require the fewest time per goal at even strength in the offensive zone. They require an average of 5.0 seconds to score off offensive possession.
It's
and
crazy.
And that's number one in the league.
Yeah, 5-on-5 were phenomenal.
5 seconds to score a goal.
That's crazy, isn't it?
That's crazy. But get this. You know who's following in that category? Such contenders as Colorado and Arizona. What?
Colorado, though. That
I mean,
makes
they're
sense.
Dominant on the top line, but Arizona?
Yeah, it doesn't make
sense. Look, Arizona's that weird team. We're going to get into that in a bit.
Yeah, we have plenty of anomalies in the desert, and that is definitely one of them. But, yeah, I mean, like I was saying, like, once again, that was a game that we should have won. And it was a home-to-home, so it was kind of like we definitely needed to win the one here at Bridgestone because we knew it was going to be a quick turnaround. We did beat them, and it did get a little chippy towards the end, so you knew that they were going to bring it in the next game. And they did.
But I don't think we were prepared for how much they brought it because we ended up losing that game 6-2, and they just gave us a beating the first period. Every time I turned around, there was a goal being scored.
Yeah, it was 3-1 in the first period. It was pretty brutal.
There's nothing more to say about that game. It was basically a home and home. You know, you split the home. That's what you wanted.
I think it just kind of goes closely hand in hand. The Preds are 5-5 in their last 10. It's 500, and that just kind of shows you. They win one, lose one. So it's kind of interesting to note. Do you consider that bit of mediocrity due to the fact that the Preds are just regressing right now, or is that regression due to the injuries?
Oh, it's injuries.
But I'll have to say, if you pick a time to regress, you might as well do it while there's injuries.
I would rather have this get out of our system right now, because if you get to the playoffs and PK's out, Turris is out, Forsberg and Arvey's out, we're not going far. Like, that is an impressive amount of high-quality talent. Like, if any other team was in this situation right now, I don't even think they would be 500. They're sub 500. Like, I'm happy that we're 500 with that many injuries, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, it has just been
And honestly,
one blow after another. And they're not like out one or two game injuries. They're out like a month at a time injuries. And they're now like stacking on top of each other.
This is why building up wins in October and November early on really help out for situations like this, because Nashville is still riding a bit of a cushion, even though they got the injury bug, that can help them stay afloat and at the top of the Central.
Exactly. Side note on that game, 0-3 again on the power play.
Yeah, I'm sensing a theme there, Daniel.
And that leads us into our game where Watson got his hat trick against the Ducks. Phenomenal response after the beating we took in St. Louis. Was very happy with this.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the stats just briefly, this game was definitely lopsided. The Preds outshot Anaheim 33-19. Slight edge on the faceoffs, but what do you know? What happened? Oh, my goodness. Is that 2-for-5 on the power play? It's a little shocking, right? I know. This is red hot, as the announcers would say. We are quick to jump on that bat. Oh, man, they're really hot tonight. Yeah. Well, we're still, like, you know, shooting at 13, you know.
Red hot compared to the ice cold they have been.
Yeah, if you're still at 10% power play, then I still don't consider it red hot. But I just want to get to 20%, you know, one day. Yeah. That's my medium. If we could ride 20% and then play 5-on-5 hockey, like you said, we're going to be good.
Well, the one thing I don't get is that the Preds, of course, this season, we know that they're going to be bad in the power play the entire season. I mean, at this point, this many games in, you're doing that bad in the power play, that's pretty much going to be your power play for the season. And you wonder at what point the coach and staff's like, you know what, we might want to change our power play just a bit. But they seem to have no sign of changing it. Look, I know you guys love the drop pass, but maybe it's time to change the drop pass and have a more aggressive zone entry on the power play.
Well, I'm not going to lie. The power play the last several games has looked a lot better. They had the infographic up tonight. Out of 16, we'd scored on 4. So we're actually 25% in the last 5 games. That said, we are still at an abysmal 15%, which is 28th in the league. If we're this bad now and there's only room for improvement to go up, I'm okay because we're still one of the better teams in the league. We're still riddled with injuries and you're only doing 15%, that has to scare other teams right there. If you're taking a look at it, you're still one of the best teams in the league. You're going to get all 4 of your better players back, and you're at 15%.
Well, that sounds great and all, but here's where that's going to bite you. It's fine during the regular season, but when you're playing, like, the conference finals and you give, like, the Jets a power play, that's when it's going to eat your butt. For now, it's fine, and we got some time to work on it still. We'll see, hopefully optimistic that it would get a little bit better. It certainly has to, just a little bit. And you just try to hold it tight when you do give up a penalty. So
yeah, like I said, only room for improvement for us. So, yeah, I mean, the rest of the league's kind of like, ooh. Hopefully the Preds don't actually get clicking, because we could be even more dangerous with the stats on 5-on-5 and then getting a marginal power play with it. We could really rack up the score on a lot of teams if that's the case.
And that leads us into our game against Colorado, which is one of our very few losses of the season. And overall, I was quite okay with this game. You know, in the end, it wasn't what we wanted. But, you know, when you got Nathan MacKinnon out there getting 2 goals, well, you know, you do what you can.
Let me just put it like this. They're good at the power play, let me tell you, because they were 2-for-2 on the night. And MacKinnon is a beast. His second goal, that angle, blew my mind. Like, there's probably only a couple players in the league that can make that shot, and he's one of them. He is a fantastic asset. I can't believe his progression. He's off the chain right now as far as just offensive firepower.
And you got to wonder what the difference is between this season and last season with him.
Well, I mean, he basically had almost mirroring production as of last season, but he's actually elevated it even slightly higher this year. And I think that's just, you see that line starting to gel more. So it's only going to go up from here. They're the best line in hockey. I'm going to say it. I'm sorry.
They are.
With Jofa being broken apart.
It's not even Jofa anymore. We got Jay. Yeah. That's it.
what did I call the other night? I call it like the Jot line or something.
Jot line. Yeah, it's not Jofa. It's Jay right now, waiting for the return of 2 wounded warriors. It's not the best line if 2 of your line mates are out. So, no, they are the best line in hockey. The Bruins might try to argue that. No, it's not even close. Nope. Like, honestly, the second contenders was Jofa, and now they're completely dismantled. So they're crushing it. McKinnon's awesome. He was flying around everywhere. We're going to give them this game. They were 100% on the power play. By the way, for the season, their power play is 32.2%.
That's cooking.
That's hot, my friends.
That's got to come down eventually.
It will come down, but man, right now it is smoking hot. I mean, and actually they were saying during that game, I think the last several, they were at like 50%, Matt. Wow. In the last like three or four games leading up to the Predators game where they scored 100% on the night for power play. They get two penalties. They capitalize on both. So I'm going to give them that game. Fantastic.
Yeah, I knew that was going to be a good one. We kind of tried to sleep on the Avalanche in the last couple of years, but I knew this was going to be a good one, so it doesn't really surprise
me.
Yeah,
where were they in your power rankings at the beginning of the year?
Yeah, they weren't quite there.
Mm.
Where were they in mine? Third.
Mm. We were a little higher than you on that one.
Yeah.
And it should be known that with the Avalanche's win, they end their 11-game losing streak to the Preds.
Yeah. That's. I actually was a little shocked that we had beat them 11 times in a row. But, you know, I mean, I guess their resurgence really didn't happen until, you know, the end of last, you know, maybe the second half of last season. So it kind of makes sense.
And now we get to what I think we're going to collectively agree.
Oh, this was a terrible game.
It was the worst game by the Preds since we last recorded.
I would rather watch paint dry than watch this game again. This was so boring.
Games against Arizona to me, and I have said it multiple times, and I'll say it again, every team that is not Arizona has to look at their schedules, see Arizona, and put an X through it because it's a game they don't want to play. They just want to get through. And as you've said before, Daniel, Arizona historically does terrible against middle-to-bottom teams.
Yeah, middle-to-bottom.
But they come against a hot team, they will demolish them, and it leaves everybody going, what in the world happened?
Let me put it like this. If you're a top-five team, you're put on notice when you go to the, you know, the Coyotes. When you know they're coming in, you need to circle it instead of Xing it out because for some reason, if you're a top-five team, and I've just happened to notice that over the last 2 to 3 years, not just this year, against the Predators, against the Lightning, against, like, top-quality teams, they somehow show up, and they match it, and they beat you. But then, other than that, garbage. It's an anomaly. I do not understand it. But we were terrible this game, and it was the most boring game I have watched all season. And I thought the Anaheim Ducks game was bad.
You know, I actually did have the Anaheim game as the worst game to talk about. And then once I saw the Arizona game, I immediately just went back and went, no race, Arizona. Especially when you know what? You get a brand new baby goalie in Aiden Hill.
Baby goalie.
Yeah, you guys got a knack for helping out rookie players that have never played a game before.
Gets a shutout. You're welcome, well, Coyotes.
We shot right at his chest, too. I mean, it was not. Yeah, he stopped a lot of shots. Okay, we shot 29 times. Whoop-de-doo. But if you're shooting it in his chest, it's not going to matter. You're going to make a goalie look real good if you just shoot like that. And that night, too, Peck bailed us out. That game could have been even worse. Like, it was crazy. So boring. So boring. Couldn't even believe it.
But to be fair, you look at the heat map. Look where the Coyotes got their goals. Right circle, right down the slot.
Slot. I mean, it was in the slot all day long.
And you go back and you look at the possession time on the game flow, Nashville controlled over half that game. But the Coyotes capitalized on the little mistakes we made the entire time.
Little mistakes and really not generating the high-quality shooting. I mean, placement matters so much, and I think it's underrated. Like, a lot of times people are – I like the down-and-dirty goals, too, you know, throw it to the net. But sometimes you got to take a great, good, accurate shot, and we were not. It was terrible. It was right in his chest the whole night.
I mean, the Preds only generated 7 high-danger chances the entire night.
Yeah, that really sums it up for us.
You guys took 5 penalties as well, which yes. They capitalized on 1.
So you talk about a momentum killer, though. I mean, even if you don't give up a goal, that's still, two minutes where you're not really attacking as you should be.
You're
on
playing
our 5
defense,
on 5.
Yeah.
Hey, our 5 on 5 is the best, so we don't need to take penalties. There you go. I mean, well, we did take tons of penalties, and maybe that was to counteract being shorthanded against the Coyotes. Ever think about that, Matt? That goes my logic from the game before, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, their ability to convert shorthanded goals is amazing, too. It's like the hockey gods, just like, you know what? We're going to give you that designation, like if you're a RPG fan, you know, everyone's got, like, alignments.
Wow.
Yes, I'm making a really deep nerd reference.
D&D, full-on D&D right now.
The Arizona Coyotes are straight chaotic neutral. They don't care. They just go in, wreck teams, and just go on about their day.
Yeah, they roll 20s all day. Got mad. Crits all day.
Well, you mentioned how good, you know, Aiden Hill is his first game or what have you. He's actually been quite hot since then, not just against you guys. He was actually this week's second star. He is 3-0. His save percentage is a beastly 9.83, which is insane.
That's going to come down. That's three.
No, it's eternal.
That's three games, Matt.
He is going in the Hockey Hall of Fame right now.
He needs to end his career right now, so he has a career.
Yeah, the best ever.
A career save percentage of 0.98.
Yeah. So it wasn't just against you guys.
I know, but...
You guys didn't help the situation out too much.
No, we gave them the confidence to be able to do that. How about that?
How nice.
We didn't get a lot of time on the power play, but one of their cross did get a misconduct, so that was always a fun little one. But, you know, we talk about misconducts. How about we get into our next game?
Boy, this was the response. So, you know, it was a terrible game against Arizona. Let's just collectively agree that that was our worst game. The team was very upset. I'm not going to get into the reffing in that game because I thought it was a little one-sided. I try to be pretty neutral when it comes to refs, but it was interesting. I'll just put it like that. There were some calls that definitely were they just let them play. And that, along with just absolutely playing terrible, had the Preds basically at boiling point. And they even said the next day at practice, they were mad. They were ticked off at the practice.
Explicits flying, sticks breaking.
And boy, did it show at the Blackhawks game, which Kyle and I were at.
Yeah, I had a coworker who was not able to go, so he gave me the tickets for the game. And graciously. I was like, yes, graciously accepted. I was like, it's a Blackhawks game.
Yeah, we're there.
So we get there. First thing we notice, Matt, is there's not a lot of red.
Yeah.
Yeah, the new ticket process with it being exclusively to, season ticket holders, is kind of nice. I'm not going to lie. It keeps them out, but I guarantee you there were some Chicago fans that were just, raising Cain because they couldn't go see their team. But
raising Cain.
Yeah, you like? Yeah, I know. I figured you'd like that one.
Yeah.
But that said, overall, it was a good night. Let me tell you, the injury bug had already crept up on us, but this was the day that we, heard the news about Forsberg. And then we get to the rink, and we're talking with Michael, actually, at the rink. And then all of a sudden we're like, oh, man, Bonino's out now, too. So this all just was, like, making sense, all the recalls. But, Matt, someone made.
Oh, yes.
Their NHL regular season debut. For the first time ever, and who was it?
My boy, Ely Tolvanen, baby.
They called him up, baby. And you know what? He delivers.
He did it.
He delivers. So we start off incredibly hot. Fiala has a quick goal, and then the next thing you know, the Blackhawks look stunned, literally on the ice, because we're just all the aggression from the Coyotes game is just being unleashed. Next thing you know, an incredible pass from Smith right into the slot, and he backhands a beauty, top shelfer, over Ward. Place goes nuts. I mean,
it was such a goal that, like, nobody was expecting it. It just came out of nowhere.
Yeah,
he gets it right in the slot, backhands it, and Ward just watches it go by.
Yeah, he had no chance.
Yeah, it was quite a crafty pass. He was wide open right there in the inner slot. Yeah, well done.
And that's not even his best shot. Yeah,
that's not even what his signature is, so.
And to be honest, the entire night, he looked good defensively. He looked more comfortable. I mean, the game's going on right now, and I'm recording this one to see how he's doing in the second game. But he just looked more fluid. He looked like he was understanding the spacing more, and definitely the defensive end. Because, before, we were really worried about defensively. How was he going to play? Forsberg was terrible at defense when we first got him. He just kind of had to get in our system. And I think being in Milwaukee has really helped him defensively. And, man, it was just so nice to see him get the going his first game and it be a beauty, and people are just like, oh man, we needed this so bad with Forsberg and Arvidsson out and Turris. I mean, it's bad at this point, so we need someone to step up.
Daniel and I are high-fiving people, and the look I gave you while he was talking is that you were insisting that he stays in the KHL.
Yeah, I'm pretty prideful. I wanted him to continue to dominate the KHL, but I'm glad we have him, and he certainly performed, and they've already got the Golvenen shirts out.
I got one.
It's coming, boy.
It's coming Thursday,
we
baby.
Did.
We ordered it on the way home. On the way home.
We were driving. I pulled the shirt up on Twitter, and he was like, I need that. He's like, here's my card.
It was on
Order
sale.
It for me.
It was on sale. They did a 11.
Nice.
11, yeah.
My locker at work is 11 because of Tolvanen.
Look at that.
So, you know, but wait, really?
Yeah, true story. So, I think it's pretty safe to say that throughout Smashville, that was not only the smooth goal of the week, that was
real smooth.
So my
and
boy,
I'll give you that one.
Wow. I didn't even put up much of a.
I knew when I was making the notes. I was just like, you know, I went ahead and put it because I was like, there's no question.
We kind of like try to hide it from Kyle, who's going to be the real smooth player of the week. But, you know, I mean,
it's hard to hide that one. Everyone was excited for that.
And he got an assist, too, on the night. So he ended up getting 2 points in his debut. First star of the night on what, you know, led to be a 5-2 rout of the Hawks. And, I mean, it was pretty impressive. And let's not forget, there was an awesome fight in this one.
Oh, yeah.
But there was a hothead, a known hothead, who, you know, maybe had a little extra something in the tank tonight. I really don't know, but all I saw was him flipping refs, and boy, it got out of hand really quick. And let's look at this stat sheet right here that we have pulled up.
You mean the Duncan Keith
it's
sheet?
Just the dump. Yeah. There's really the game summary is Duncan Keith here.
Yeah, you should just take Chicago Blackhawks, simply write Duncan Keith, because yeah, we're sitting there watching it. Goal gets scored. This is the third goal had been scored by now.
3-0,
it was already 3-0.
So he's already ticked off, and then Salty.
Salty gives him a hit, and if Duncan Keith had let it go, Salty was going to get a penalty.
Yep.
But Keith just let it go, and he just started
wailing.
He started wailing on Salty. And next thing you know, everybody's like, you know, having just a fight everywhere, and then you got Matt Irwin fighting Alex DeBrincat. It was just crazy. There's bodies flying everywhere. And next thing you know,
meanwhile,
we see a ref flying through the air.
Yeah. There's two refs, basically. One on top of Salty just to kind of like shield him, and then another one trying to wrestle Keith. And he literally got flipped over, and I was like, once the Zebras start flying like that, there's no way he's not leaving the ice for a significant amount of time, if not the game. But let's look at this sheet right here.
So Duncan Keith gets, this is all at 7:18 of the first period.
And how much time did he have on ice?
He only had, and while I pull it up here, because I should have had this pulled up since we were going to talk about it.
2 minutes and 42 seconds.
Yeah.
So 2 minutes and 42 seconds.
Of ice time.
He only played 4 shifts. And in that 4 shifts and 2 minutes and 42 seconds of ice time, he accumulated 5 penalties for a total of 29 penalty minutes.
Oh my gosh.
He got 2 minutes for roughing. He got a 5 for fighting. He got a 10-minute game misconduct.
And a misconduct on top.
Yep. And then he got another 2-minute instigator.
Bro, if you're going to go hard, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, I mean, he did.
Which led to the Preds being on a very odd 7-minute power play.
Which we only scored once on, and we got scored on once. I was like, man, we could have declined all of that and played better. We were, by the way, it was 3-0, 5 minutes into the game, 5-on-5. We hit the power play, and my God, the brakes fall off. We're just like, oh, we can't even get in the zone.
To be fair, Brandon Saad did beat Ellis, but Ellis didn't really look like he knew what he was doing on that play.
I felt like Ellis could have honestly stepped up a little bit and played the body, played the puck. He had time to. There was no one else on the other side. Ellis played it pretty safe, and it just happened to be a weird ricochet off of Ellis. And actually, in the end, it kind of like hit his hand and went in. So Peck didn't even see it. So whatever, but I wanted Ellis to step up and actually like check and make an actual play on the body because he could have in that situation.
And in this game, we also got our first look at Anthony Richard, who got called up from Milwaukee for the illness of Nick Bonino.
Yeah, and this was a crazy story. So apparently he lands at like 4:30 in Nashville before the game. But that morning, apparently he was going to the game, you know, for Milwaukee, and I think it was Rockford or something like that. They call him at like 11:30, and they say, hey, you're being called up for your first ever NHL game. So he has to run around and get all of his equipment. He's trying to call his parents, and apparently he got, like, his dad was trying to get tickets to Nashville to see him, couldn't even get a flight. So his parents, you know, have to watch, you know, at home on TV, but he flies in, immediately comes to the rink, and they're just running him through. They're giving him all the – I mean, could you imagine the amount of info that that poor kid was throwing at him in about 2 hours before the game, trying to get him into the system, trying to figure out what's what. Fortunately, though, bottom line, looked like Milwaukee to me. So he might have felt kind of right at home.
I mean, yeah, he looked really good on the ice. Now, eye test-wise – He's not the biggest.
He's not big.
But he's very fast.
Oh, he is speedy.
Anytime he got the puck, good luck Blackhawks defense catching him because he was zipping right around them.
Yeah. He definitely does need to work on, you know, hitting the gym a little bit, getting a little bigger frame to hold people off. But the speed was there, let me tell you. So, you know, it was a great story for him. I was pretty, you know, pleased with his time on ice. He didn't do anything crazy. He played very conservative, but that's what he needed to do because, well, let's be honest, he just was getting called up.
Yeah.
He didn't want to
go out there and be too big and lay an egg. Yeah.
And he did everything right, and to be honest, pretty good results for first game.
And I will say, rest in peace, Tyler Moy.
Oh, my gosh, you're still on that?
Because he did get brought up. We ran into Michael Gallagher while we were walking through the concourse, and we were talking about all these things. And, of course, you know, my lasting legacy this season is the fact that I was a big proponent of Tyler Moy. So it got brought up, too. So, you know, Tyler Moy, if you're listening, you're probably not. But if you do, I had your back, man. And the last thing we'll I know. And I will say that the with the Preds scoring 3 goals on the first 4 shots of the Blackhawks game, that was the second time in franchise history since February 12th, 2008, when they did it against the Red Wings.
Oh, wow.
Had to throw that in there, didn't you?
Just a little jab.
You know, I did.
Yeah.
And for you, Matt, Tolvanen was the 177th player to score a goal for the Preds.
Ah, okay.
What a unique, in-depth fact from Kyle. Nice. And you know what was even better? We got Frosties. We got first-period Frosties, rare. And on the way home, we pull into Wendy's. And you're going to love this. Get up, you know, we're like, we see the sign, first of all, and it says, fries, any size, $1. First of all, count me in.
Right.
Kyle, do you want one, too? Yes.
Count me in, double
A. We're doubling down. So we're getting free Frosties and 2 large fries for only $1 a piece. Pull up to the window.
Score.
It's $2, you know? Here you go. Well, guess what? We made 2 extra Frosties. Do you want them? Well, duh, I want them. Was that even a question? Put them in the car. Put them in now. We're squealing on the way out. We get 4 Frosties. 4 Frosties and 2 large fries. Man, what a good night. And Tolvanen scores his first goal. Excellent,
good night,
excellent
indeed.
Saturday night, let me tell you.
I mean, wow. I can't think of a better way to end a Saturday night game in Smashville with Frosties and French fries and a win against the Blackhawks. But, Matt, do we have any milestones or injuries to talk about?
Well, we have
that's quite a lot.
Yeah, a ton of stuff to talk about. We're going to have to condense it down because I've got a whole show based on things that have happened. But
give us the highlights.
A couple of things to mention is that Toronto has re-signed William Nylander to a 6-year deal for about $7 million per with $25 million signing bonus. Pretty hefty John Hancock signature there.
And the NHL can finally get on something else about their day.
Yes, that has been the much anticipated. So. Also, you've seen that Carolina has put Darling on waivers. I believe he cleared.
Sadly, he did.
Yes. And Monday, or I'm sorry, not Monday. Wow, good acronym. Montreal.
Wow. Monday.
They have put Carl Alzner on waivers, and this is just his second year in his 5-year deal at $4.6 million per. So you're looking at almost a $5 million per year player getting put on waivers. That's not where you want to go. In trade news, Chicago trade Nick Schmaltz to Arizona for Dylan Strome and Brendan Perlini. And Strome is a former third overall pick, and Schmaltz had 52 points last year. Perlini had 30, And Strome really hasn't played much in the last 2 years, so he's not really much to look at stat-wise. I mentioned a couple stars of the week, as Aiden Hill had the second star. First star belonged to Mark Scheifele with 5 goals in 4 games, and he had back-to-back game winners in OT and shootout. And the third star was Jonathan Huberdeau, had 9 points in 4 games.
I'm not surprised with Scheifele. He's a good player.
Yeah, they've been lighting it up. Also, speaking of Winnipeg news, mentioned Patrick Laine, who's just been a beast. He's the fourth youngest player. He had 100 goals.
Yeah, he's killing it. He had a 5-goal game the other night.
He has 18 goals in 12 games, which is the most in a one-month period since Pavel Bure in 94. He had 13 goals in 6 games, which is the fourth most in history, behind Gretzky, who had 15, and Lemieux had 14.
That's pretty good company to be with.
Heck yeah. So,
I'm just saying.
Yeah, I think Dmitry Filipovich said there's only 2 players who have as many goals this entire year as Laine has in that month. So pretty crazy. Also, your boy Kyle Ovi has now sole position of 15th all-time in goals, passing Joe Sakic and Jerome Iginla.
Wow.
So
very happy about that.
I feel like he's been in my news segment for quite a lot lately.
He's hit a lot of milestones. The power play goals.
Power play was one of them. Yeah,
because he's just awesome.
He's still racking up goals. I mean, he's at 18 already this year. So what's crazy is he's getting older, but he's still consistently scoring goals. And it's interesting to note, depending on how many years he plays and if he can stay this consistent, he could be top 3 all time.
Yeah. I love my Russians. Also, Florida's Keith Yandle now is the active Ironman leader, and with 738 games straight without being injured, that's the 6th longest streak in history of Ironman.
That's incredible.
And it really should be Cogliano's, but he had to end it last season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was kind of unfortunate because I was really hoping you would actually said it, but yeah. Cogliano's been a mainstay for a long time in the league.
Yeah, he has. And also a couple news on the American front. Jonathan Quick has now 50 shutouts, which is the most among U.S.-born goaltenders. And Ryan Miller is now first among U.S. goaltenders in wins with 374. And Peter Laviolette with his 200th win in Nashville, that's now the most he's had among his 4 NHL coaching spots. So quite a bit of a hand clap for him as well.
Smashville, baby. Gotta love it.
Oh, and to go back to Alexander Ovechkin, he has 626 career goals.
Yeah.
And what's crazy is if he averages, you know, say 40 this year, which it looks like he's definitely going to hit, already at almost 20, and hits another 40 next year, he's going to be very close to passing Solani, Lemieux, and Messier.
Wow. That's crazy.
Which, by the way, they're only like 2 goals off. So there's 2 in between almost every single one of them. But yeah, he could literally jump in 1 or 2 seasons into top 8 contention.
Yeah, this is why he's constantly in our news segment, because he's just one milestone after the next.
He's so close. And like I said, after this year, really it's like a milestone achievement on almost every couple of goals. So next year is going to be a very career year for him if he keeps up the goal pace, because it's incredible.
Well, everybody loves Ovechkin for sure, and that brings me to my last topic to mention, is that depending on who you love, Ovechkin or whoever, it is the NHL's 2019 All-Star Fan Vote is open right now, so you can vote for the likes of Ovechkin or PK Subban or what have you.
Who's injured?
Philip Forsberg even.
Who's injured? I'm sorry. I just keep – you all keep naming Central Division players.
Okay,
injured.
You know who didn't make it that Boston fans are really upset about?
Pasta?
Yeah, he did make it.
I thought I'd heard something about that on Twitter. But, yeah, that's a little surprising that he didn't make it. I guess my vote right now would be Rene, just because of save percentage and wins and, you know, all the other stats. Which, by the way, he's also having another incredible year, because I saw they started putting up all the major stats for goalies now, and he was top 5 in all 3 again. So yeah, I'm like, what I do you know? That. Like, he was the only goalie on all 3. It was like wins, save percentage, and goals against.
Yeah.
He was on every single one, top 5, and he was number 1 at save percentage by a lot, actually. It was startling. He was sub 2. He's like 0.89 or something. It very impressive start for Rene this year. He gets better with age, but that'll be my Central Division vote, you know, because everyone else is injured.
Yeah.
So, Daniel, what kind of games do we have coming up next time we record?
All right, so right now we are currently playing against Buffalo. The game looks to be almost over. We're about to wrap it up. We are up 2-1, so let's hope, you know, let's hope we can hang on there. The next game will be on the road in Vancouver on the 6th. We follow that up with the red-hot Calgary Flames on the 8th. Then we finally bring it back home for a 3-game stand against Ottawa, Vancouver, and New Jersey, and that's on the Saturday the 15th. So our next recording night, it looks like we will be on the road in Ottawa, roughly the 17th. So,
wait, we're actually going to be on the road?
I wish, but no, we will be here recording, so we'll have to provide more in-game updates as that one progresses.
Hey, it would be nice if we ever got invited to come along with the team and give a fan broadcast as well.
Yep, that's maybe a pipe dream. We'll see that one maybe fulfilled in the next 5 to 10 years. So.
Big pipe dream. Well, guys, this has been Music City Gold. This is our second-to-last episode before we go on the Christmas break. So you guys have a great week. Take it away, Rachel.
You've been listening to Music City Gold on Penalty Box Radio, powered by the Ingram Agency. We'd love to interact with you on Twitter. The show can be found at Music City Gold. You can find Kyle at Kyle Hancock, Daniel at C. Dan Drum, and Matt at Matt Bain 31. Past episodes of the show can be found by subscribing to Penalty Box Radio on iTunes, SoundCloud, or at penaltyboxradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the ice.